Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. How's everybody doing out there? As always, I'm doing good. This episode, my guest is handsome Johnny Starr, who's returning to the show after 8 years. We talk about him replacing Bobby Heenan, working with Ox Baker, falling out with Dick the Bruiser, and much more. That interview's coming up just in a bit. Remember, on November 8th, I will be attending the Coastal Wrestling Federation show called Overload in Milton, Florida. So if any of you listeners are in the area, come to the show and say hi. I did announce that I was uploading 2 unboxing videos on my YouTube channel. I did not get to record those as I planned. Hopefully, by the time you're hearing this, they will be uploaded, though, as I plan to record them very soon. Once again, special thanks to Figures Toy Company and the Nerd Closet for the awesome figures. So go check them both out and order yourself something today. All right, let's take a break. And when I come back, I'll have my interview with handsome Johnny Starr. Philsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, 3-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Philsinger Games, PhilsingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by a former WWA wrestler and manager, handsome Johnny Starr. John, how are you?
I am doing well, and it's a great pleasure to be with you. How are things with the podcast and everything in your life?
Doing very good. I guess I should have said returning, because you've been on the show before.
Right.
And, yeah, and everything else. But I venture to guess you probably don't get called handsome much anymore by the general public. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't mean that as an insult. I mean,
I can't even get my wife to buy into that anymore.
Oh, no. Well, once upon a time, I guess it was true, right? They billed you as handsome, right? Johnny Starr.
That's right.
So let's talk. Let's go back to the beginning. What are your first memories as wrestling as a kid?
Oh, gosh. Well, interestingly, my first memories are wrestling from Chicago.
Yep.
And I think the guy's name was Russ Davis, wasn't it? The announcer up there.
Yeah.
And of course, Dick the Bruiser and Lou Thesz, the big stars. Wilbur Snyder was there, I think. And so I just remember how exciting it was. And of course, this was back in the days where you only had one TV and it was black and white.
Yeah.
And so, my dad didn't always want to watch it. So sometimes I only got to watch it every other week. And so I think that just made me love it all the more. And
Yeah.
I always, from the time I was 6 years old, I always said, I'm going to be a professional wrestler someday. And, I was fortunate enough to be able to live that dream for a few years.
Yeah, and when you got to that point, you were trained and started your wrestling journey with a Dale Mann. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So tell us about that. How did that connection happen where you met Dale Mann and started to train?
Well, I told my wife I wasn't going to start every sentence with "well," and I'm already doing that. But
That's
I
okay.
apologize.
No, that's all right.
When I was 20 years old, I realized if I'm ever going to realize this dream to become a professional wrestler, I better start doing something about it. So I started. I played college football, and I was in decent shape, but I started lifting weights, a little harder, and with a little more purpose. And then I realized the next thing I would have to do, because there weren't really very many wrestling schools, if, well, I guess Ganya had one, but I didn't know about it, that I was going to have to meet somebody in the professional wrestling business. So one summer, again, when I was 20 years old, I was selling radio advertising locally and had done pretty well and made some money. And so I found out how to sponsor a match. And I figured, hey, if I sponsor it, they have to talk to me. So I put up to $1,000 to sponsor the match in my hometown of Greenfield, Indiana. And Dale Mann happened to be the guy that brought the ring out. He was setting up the ring because he was injured and couldn't wrestle for a while. So, of course, I showed up to let him in. We got to talking. And this is kind of interesting. He saw my girlfriend there, and Dale was the guy that, every good-looking woman was potential for him, he thought, And anyway, he saw my girlfriend, and I said to him, I'd really like to get into wrestling. How do I do that? He said, well, if you'd fix me up with that girl over there, I'd train you. Which is, the more you know wrestlers, that's not
That's
really that far-fetched,
no,
right?
that's
So.
so pro wrestling, isn't it?
And I, well, as it turned out, I said, well, Dale, that's my girlfriend. You can't have her. But as it turned out, she has an identical twin sister,
Ah,
which is
okay.
true. And I said, I probably could fix you up with her. Well, to make a long story short, by the time he realized I wasn't going to fix him up with her, he had me pretty much trained.
There you go. And of
And,
course, well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
well, and then the way I actually got into business, he went back down to Kentucky and started an independent promotion. He needed wrestlers. And so he had been training myself and Max Blue at the time. And so Max and I went down there and started working for him. And that's how we got into it.
Yeah, actually, my next question was going to be about Max Blue because I knew you trained with him and started with him, and he was another Dick the Bruiser regular in the 70s and 80s. So, and you and Max were really good friends. I mean, for a long time. I don't know. Maybe today. I don't know. Tell me a little bit about Max because a lot of people don't know about him.
Well, Max was a very good college wrestler, as a matter of fact. And I think Max is maybe 4 years older than I am. He'd gone to Indiana State, and I went to Indiana University. But he was a good college wrestler. And so when we worked out at Dale's house in the basement there, I mean, I got some pretty good workouts because I wasn't a college wrestler, so I didn't know how to shoot, but Max did. But also, Max, obviously, we weren't shooting down there very much because we had to learn the business. And so Max was a really great guy to work with. He was willing to do what we needed to do to learn the trade, so to speak. And we stayed friends for years. But in all honesty, I had probably haven't talked to him for 15 years. And I really don't know if he's still alive. I hope he is, because I'd love to see him again. But he was good. He was a great guy. I had a lot of respect for him. And by the way, when Dick the Bruiser and Bruiser Brody got in that fight, and I think it was in Peoria, I think that's where it was, Max was in the dressing room, and he actually stepped in between them. And very few people know that.
That's right.
And he called me. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, Max is one of those guys I've tried to track down for a long time. I'd love to talk to him if he is still alive. I can't, but I'm having trouble, finding a connection and connecting with him.
Yeah.
If he is still alive, I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah, well, I may actually get serious about trying to find him. His real name is Dennis Dotson, and he always lived on the south side of Indianapolis. He had various jobs. He wrestled up to, I'm sure, into his early 50s at least.
I've tried to make some contact. He's one of those guys I'm hoping he's still alive and hoping I
Yeah.
can make some contact with him. When we talk about your early career, I got to tell you, tell me a little bit about the name Jocko Chino.
Well, I only wrestled under that name for one match, and I don't know why I chose that. I guess I thought, I wanted to be kind of a dirty heel, not a pretty boy heel.
I
And
gotcha.
so where I came up, I don't know where I came up with it, but I used it the first, I think probably the first one or two matches I worked for Bruiser in Elwood, Indiana. I came with my Jocko Chino outfit and worked with Jocko Chino. And Bruiser said after, says, "Get rid of that." He said, "You're not working that way. Go back to the hands." Well, I was gorgeous Johnny Starr then. And but I don't know. I just, well, this, and it was Jocko Chino, the Chicago Street Fighter. So that was what was supposed to make me sound tough,
Yeah,
But
well, I wonder why that didn't stick. I mean, it just never. Who knows, man? Maybe.
you're the only guy to ever even ask me about that. I'm surprised you knew about that.
Maybe if you'd stuck with Jocko, Ch maybe this might have been a whole different conversation, John. I
Yeah.
mean, you never know what. Just such a funny name.
Yeah.
But you talked about you working for Bruiser, right? And that switch, right? You were working in the Kentucky area, right, for Del Man, doing
Right.
some of those shows.
Yeah.
And then when you started working in Indiana for Bruiser, it was for you, it was kind of a unique switch because it all kind of stemmed for at first, you were trying to get licensed as a promoter in Indiana, right?
Well, I ultimately did get licensed as a
Sure,
promoter.
right. Yeah, we'll talk about that. But
Yeah, and yeah. Well, here's kind of, it was kind of two things happened at once, I guess. I got booked on a card in Southern Indiana with there was two or I don't know, maybe, well, Max and I were on there, and I think maybe a couple other independent guys, and then Bruiser sent down four guys. And this had to do with a lawsuit that Bruiser had lost. So a guy named Don Pruitt had sued him for having a monopoly, and so Bruiser had to furnish talent. So anyway, and Mitsuo Arakawa was one of the wrestlers there. And I can't remember who I worked with. I think it was a guy named Percy Pringle, but I could be wrong about that. At any rate, Mitsu came up afterwards and he said, "Hey, you need to call Bruiser and you could work up there." And he gave me Bruiser's number and everything. And so he recommended me to Bruiser. And Mitsu was one of the best human beings I ever met in my life. He was just a great guy. And so he was a big help to me, and certainly with that recommendation. And Moose Sholok also recommended me. So and then I had been trying to get a license, and I of course dropped it at that point, because really what I wanted to do was work for Bruiser. And it was the guys in Kentucky that wanted me to get the license so they could come in here and go opposition. Well, I didn't care about that. So anyway, in the process, though, of at least exploring the possibility of a license, I met Kels McClure, who was the head of the athletic commission. And well, anyway, Kels and I had friends in common because my dad was politically connected, and Kels was a Democrat, and my dad was a big Democrat. And so Kels kind of told Bruiser, "Use this guy." And so that helped me when the head of the athletic commission, kind of went to bat for me as well.
So how did you develop the handsome Johnny Starr gimmick? Right, you said at first it was gorgeous, Jimmy or Johnny Starr, excuse me. Where did that come from? In any idea?
Well, I think it was just the idea that I had always admired those pretty boys. Of course, Bobby Heenan in particular was I was a huge fan of his, and so and Jimmy Valiant and people like that. But I just thought that was a gimmick that would be a lot of fun to do.
Yeah.
And so I started out as Gorgeous Johnny Starr, because Johnny Starr just sounded like a pretty boy name, you know.
Sure,
and
sure.
And then, of course, Gorgeous, you know. But the interesting thing was, when Bruiser decided to put me over, and I'll never forget this, he pulled me aside in the locker room at Champaign, Illinois, and said, you know, I'm going to make you a manager, and we're going to call you Handsome Johnny Starr. And I said, well, Dick, Handsome Jimmy Valiant was just here for like 3 years.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want it? Well, Dick, you know, arguing with Dick was fruitless.
Yeah.
And so I realized, okay, he wants to give me a push, put me on top. I'm not going to sit here and argue with him. Right.
Yep.
So,
yep.
So, well, you know, that's how Handsome, I would have never chosen it, but that's how it came about.
Yeah. That's the case with a lot of people with Bruiser, right? People always ask, oh, how did this name come? And there's nothing to it. It was just Bruiser, whatever.
Yeah.
Like Bobby Heenan always said, he really is not 100% sure why the name Bobby came into it.
Yeah.
he assumed it was because of Bobby Shane, but he didn't know, right? Because Bruiser just said one day, oh, yeah, now you're Bobby Heenan. And
yeah.
Whatever. And that was Bruiser's way, right? Whatever came to mind, that's what you went with.
And the more you argued, the less chance he was going to change his mind. So there was no use arguing. I will say this, in Bobby's case, his real name was Ray. I think Bobby was a much better name for a pretty boy guy than Ray.
I do, too, yeah. I mean, I think it worked in the long run. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely did.
Yeah. Well, and like you mentioned, right, you were working for Heenan. In the 70s, you kind of became a key player for Bruiser. What did you think once you made that switch over from Kentucky to – what did you work? I mean, this had to be the wrestling, right, that you grew up watching. And what did you think working for Bruiser at that time? I mean, it had to feel kind of surreal for you.
That's the perfect description. It was, because, again, at 6 years old, I was watching Dick the Bruiser on television.
Yeah.
You know, wanting to be a wrestler. Then to actually be in the ring with him, it was surreal.
Yeah.
I will say there was a match after he put Ox Baker and I together. We had a match that made no sense whatsoever. It was Ox and I against Bruiser and Crusher.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the fans had to think, well, this is not a match. I mean, but regardless, we headlined the convention center in Indianapolis. And I remember driving from my home in Greenfield, 20 miles away, to the match that night, thinking, I can't believe this is real. That I'm going to be in the main event with Dick the Bruiser and the convention center.
Yep.
And it was definitely surreal. But you know what helped me a lot in the business was Mike Snyder. You remember Wilbur's son, Mike.
I do. And that was actually the next thing I was going to ask you.
Okay.
Because you have said, right, that you had several matches with Mike Snyder that you think kind of helped make Bruiser look at you a little differently.
Oh, no question about it. We had, of course, when I first came up here, I was young in the business. I was a jobber, I was going to do jobs. And so for the first few months I did jobs, but they put me in with Mike. And of course I was doing jobs for him, but we were flying around the ring and we were having matches that were, to be honest, so good that the other wrestlers were coming out and watching us.
Yep.
And then we'd come back and, and get a lot of praise. And Mike, of course, he and I both went to Indiana University at the time.
Sure,
he's
right.
2 years older than I am.
Yeah.
But Mike was going back and telling Wilbur, and they were hearing about it. Just so that was the big help.
Yeah.
That I did know how to work, and I was a kind of a flyer, so to speak. And of course, Mike was.
Yeah.
And those matches, I believe that's kind of what made it. And then, but I also believe that these little political contacts and things helped me a lot too.
Well, sure, right. I mean, you said your dad was a key, key Democrat in the state and whatever.
Right.
So was Bruiser's mom.
Right.
I'm sure there was a little case there. But Mike Snyder is a great talent. One of those guys that not enough people talk about.
Right.
And I know he went on. He's a big tennis player and everything else and whatnot. But Mike was a great talent. Had a great look and everything else.
Mike was by far. And I think this is not a stretch. the best athlete in the business when he was there. I'm not saying he was the best professional wrestler, although he was really good.
Yeah.
But he was without question the best athlete in the business. I mean, he could do everything. And he was a great football player. I played against him when I was a freshman and he was a senior. And I had a brother that was a senior also, was an all-state football player. But we played Mike's school, and I can remember Mike one game when I was playing, intercepting a pass and stepping on my back on the way to the end zone as he scored.
Yeah.
But, he was good. He was good.
Yeah, and when most people think of handsome Johnny Starrett, you're often cited as the quote-unquote guy who had to take Bobby Heenan's spot.
Yeah.
And I guess that's, I don't know, the legacy, the whatever you want to call it, that you've had to endure. But when that happened, right, obviously Heenan left, you know, whatever, the dispute over pay with Bruiser. He went full-time to the AWA. Bruiser decided to kind of push you up more as that lead heel manager.
Yeah.
Did, at that time, did Bruiser, and was there pressure from Bruiser to fill that spot, or did he just say, hey, now you're, this is you? And he kind of let you go from there. What was that like in the moment for you when all that developed?
He, Bruiser called me actually on the phone when I was, because I was still going to IU at the time.
Sure.
And said, Heenan's leaving and we're going to put you in that slot.
Okay.
Of course, I was ecstatic. I can't even tell you, to be in that. It never dawned on me at the time, you're going to have to follow the best manager in the history of wrestling.
Sure.
Yeah. All I thought about, this is a great opportunity.
Right.
There was never any, that's just what it was. And Dick kind of left me to my own devices to develop the character. I think the biggest mistake I made developing the character was trying to be like Bobby Heenan.
Yeah, okay.
And you just can't. I mean, you can't do it. His wit was too quick. Yep. He probably the best wrestling mind in history, along with everything else. Tremendous worker. I wouldn't say he was the best guy I ever met. He certainly, the story of Bobby. I mean, he quit school in the eighth grade and he was supporting his mom. I mean, unbelievable story.
Sure.
I mean, that's the rags to riches.
Yep.
But Bobby was very protective of his space.
Sure.
And I was being put into his space.
Yeah.
So he was not happy about that. And, even though when he would come back to Indy, we would hang around together and go to bars together and things. But always after we went out, I'd get a call from Bruiser because Heenan had gone home and called him and told him something I'd said, complaining about the pay usually. I had to kind of watch that, but actually in our last years, Heenan and I weren't even on speaking terms. So, but all that being said, I absolutely believe he was the greatest at what he did. There was just never anybody better than he was.
I agree with that. That's professional wrestling, right? Everybody super protective of their spot and is always fearful that someone's going to come along and take that spot from them. That's the age-old story of why guys worked hurt and worked this and that and whatever else. I mean, you hear it time and time and time again.
Yeah.
And, of course, right, Bobby would naturally would think, right, here's this young guy doing this managing thing, and he's, I'm sure in his mind, he's fearful, right? Or is Johnny Starr going to take my spot? And, I find that funny that, right? I mean, Bobby had a little heat with you, but right, not to your face, I guess, huh? Kind of behind your back.
Yeah. The thing was, I so admired him that I didn't care. I know he's saying these things and this, that, and the other, but I liked being with him because, again, he was so clever and so smart that I was learning from him. And, we had a match one time. Up in Chicago, it was Oxbaker against, I believe it was Mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
And Heenan managed Mulligan and I managed Ox. And the finish was basically, Ox is getting ready to pin Mulligan and Heenan gets up to interfere. But I get up, and this is in the amphitheater, but I get up and stop him from interfering.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I never saw the crowd go that crazy.
Yeah.
And Bobby and I could have come back against each other. I mean, it would have made me a baby faced, of course.
Sure.
It did. I mean, it actually ruined me as a heel.
Yeah.
But we could have come back and done some business. But of course, again, Bruiser would never allow that.
Yeah.
No, young guys are going to come back and outdraw him. I don't know that we would have outdrawn him, but,
yeah.
But we would have had one good show, you know, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That was always the thing with Bruiser. No one was going to be on top over Bruiser.
Right.
And, but you mentioned it, right? You went to IU, Indiana University,
yeah.
An
yeah.
English major. And that was during some of this time. So what was that like? I mean, you're balancing two peculiar sides of your life.
Yeah.
Right? This college student and a professional wrestler. What was that like for you at that time?
Well, it was difficult because, you know, I would go to class all day in Northern Indiana, wherever we were working.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was kind of physically draining on me. But on the other hand, being on campus – as you know, and people were watching, wrestling, and they would occasionally recognize me, and that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe I told you this the last time I was on, but I had one incident where these guys from IU sent a letter to Sam Miniker, asking for a picture of Ox Baker and myself because they watched wrestling at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, on Saturdays, and but they didn't know I lived in Bloomington.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got home from a match real late, well, midnight, 1 a.m., and I had the pictures. So I went up to their dorm and knocked on the door and said, hey, you wanted a picture of us, right? And they're like, of course, they were drunk and high, and they're watching wrestling. And they, you know, I'm on the TV set, and I'm at their front door, you know.
Yeah.
And they were – the looks on their faces was just hysterical. But that was kind of fun, you know.
Yeah. And we've talked, right? Ox Baker's come up several times, right? This, I don't know, larger than life wrestling personality, right? I mean, so, you know, such a big thing. What was Ox like to work with for you? Because Ox is always known as, right, the guy that had bad knees, couldn't bump a lot, worked around a lot, but he had this terrifying look.
Yes.
That scared everybody.
Yeah.
So what was it like for you to manage him and work with him?
Well, I did enjoy it at first. One of the problems is Ox, in those days, and really today too, still, a heel can't be a clown.
Yeah.
And Ox would clown too much in the ring, and he would kill the heat. And he brought a lot of heat from the other wrestlers.
Sure.
They did not like the way he conducted himself.
Yeah.
And I resented it because it kind of reflected on me a little bit. And so Bobby Heenan would have a New Year's Eve party every year. He wouldn't invite me because I was Ox's manager and he didn't like Ox, you know, so, but that's okay. You know, Ox and I had a pretty good run for a couple of years and it was fun, but it was getting really old with him doing the clowning and embarrass, you know, he would do things like embarrass you outside the ring, not when you were doing wrestling stuff, but like you might invite him over to your house or something and he'd say something incredibly rude or embarrassing. And he did that to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Do you remember a guy named Brad Davis that promoted some independent wrestling?
I do. Yeah. I know that name. Yeah.
Well, Brad had Ox stay at his house for a weekend one time and he ended up throwing him out because Ox was so rude to everybody and it was an embarrassment.
Yeah.
And that's just the way he was, you know.
Yeah,
I don't
know
how to explain it. But I would say this. Ox cost himself several hundred thousand dollars because of his big mouth and the way he conducted himself. Because Gagne wouldn't use him.
Sure.
And, you know, he could have had a great run with Gagne and probably had a good run with Vince, but they wouldn't use him.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, and seeing how WWE, right, this is kind of this unique territory, right, where
yeah.
They didn't run towns weekly, right? It was more of a monthly type deal. And then, you know, and there was only a handful of towns that were monthly. And then there was spot shows scattered within that, wherever Bruiser could book a show. I'm assuming that you really, you probably didn't really travel with many people, right? It was more of a get there on your own kind of deal, given the schedule.
It depends on where we were going. If we were going to Chicago for Indianapolis, you'd always go with other people.
Yeah.
And Ox and I did travel together a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we did. And I'm just trying to think who, I mean, Ox was, well, Guy Mitchell, I traveled with him. Guy and I were really good friends. John Hill was his real name.
Yeah. What a great guy.
Very valiant. Yeah. You know, but yeah. So, but yeah, I traveled, but I wasn't going all over the country. You know, Ox did.
Sure.
Go to other territories and things. And yeah. I really didn't.
Yeah. And I'm assuming when you and Ox traveled together, you were doing the driving.
Well, no, oddly enough, Ox almost always did the driving.
Well, that seems weird.
it was weird and dangerous because he wasn't the best easily distracted.
I bet. But he had bad knees, couldn't take a bump. I don't know about driving a car.
Yeah, well, he wasn't much better at driving a car.
There
the thing
go.
About the reason he drove was because he had a much bigger car than I did. And, you know,
gotcha.
He was 6'5" and 300 pounds.
Sure,
So that's why he drove. And, you know, he never charged me any transportation. I'll say that.
Yeah.
You know, he was, of course, I was his only friend in the world there for a while. So that's probably why.
There you go. Well, kind of late in your career, right? You did take a trip to Memphis for a few dates. And you've always said, you mentioned that really wasn't a pleasant experience for you. Maybe even almost an eye-opening experience for you. So tell us a little bit about that trip to Memphis.
I wanted to take one last try at making my living at wrestling. And I knew about Memphis. They, as you know, were running town 7 days a week.
Yep.
And had a pretty good territory at the time. Lawler was on top. And so I called Christine Jarrett, who was Jerry Jarrett's mother. And that's who you work through.
Mm-hmm.
And sent her some pictures. Well, they got the pictures and they wanted to bring me in as a baby face.
Okay.
Which I had never worked as a baby face. I didn't have a feel for it. Probably wasn't a good enough athlete to really do it the way it needed to be done. But I agreed to come down. And I got there and I drove all night. And they did television like at 10 in the morning or something. It was real early.
Yeah.
And it was live.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know. So anyway, I wasn't at the top of my game by any respect. And I had a match with somebody and they put me over. And I was going to wrestle, that was on a Saturday. On a Monday, I was supposed to wrestle a guy named, I think, Ron Bass for the Southern Heavyweight Championship.
Yep.
Well, I did a blade job on TV for this kid. And his kid that wrestled, and his father was also a wrestler. I can't remember their name right now. But the father interfered after I beat the kid, you know, and cut me. And I dropped my blade in the ring. I didn't know it.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was a no-no back then because nobody ever admitted that that's how we got juice, you know.
Yep.
So that was bad. And then one of the wrestlers from Memphis brought the blade back and was like, is this yours? You know, oh, God. You know, that just the worst crime you could commit.
Yeah.
Plus the finish, I was doing a sunset flip, which I know you know what that is. Maybe everybody listening doesn't. But anyway, it's a little bit more – it's a move a heel wouldn't normally use.
Yeah.
And I didn't execute it very well, so that was bad.
Uh-huh.
So just things weren't going well. And then Lawler and I partnered up out in Jonesboro, Arkansas that night and wrestled. I think it was Wayne Ferris that was the – what his name was in the WWE?
The Honky Tonk Man, yeah.
Honky Tonk Man, yeah. And, and another guy. Anyway, of course, Lawler – it was a tag match, and Lawler went over, and I know what I did. I must have wrestled another match, too, because the big Russian guy that worked for the WWF, he's like 6'5", and 300-something,
Nikolai Volkov?
Nikolai, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I didn't know him much, really, just that night, but he was a very nice guy. But here I am, 5'10", 200 pounds, and he's 6-something and 300, and I tore him into the ropes and backdropped him.
Oh.
And as he's going, he says, he's saying this as I'm throwing him into the ropes, nobody's going to believe this. And I think he was right, but he took the bump. I give him credit. And, but it was another mistake I made, you know.
Yeah,
and so, and I could tell by the attitude in the locker room that I was not going to be accepted. And I just said, I'm just done with this. You know, I've got a college education. I'm away from home. I'm not making any money. You know, of course, I didn't give him a chance, really. But generally in wrestling, I hadn't made any money. And I said, no, I'm going home and I'm going to go get a job and, you know, support myself. So that's what I did. And it wasn't the right thing to do because I just walked out on them and they had that match for me planned on Monday. I did call Christine on the phone to tell her I wasn't coming back. And she was pretty gracious about it, actually. By that time, they were probably happy I wasn't coming back.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
Maybe you saved them a call.
Yeah. You know, that's probably right.
Yeah, but back in the WWE, right, prior to all this, right, yeah. After Ox, right, you were working with Ox. Ox left, and they kind of put you in a tag team with Jimmy Valiant because Jimmy Valiant had returned to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
He wasn't teaming with Johnny at that point, and then and you and him, and it was working, and things were going, you know, pretty well. But this is at that point where if I'm wrong, you kind of become a little disenchanted with the wrestling business.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
So tell us about that. Cause I mean, you know, you said that you enjoyed teaming with Jimmy and it potentially could have been a little something, but maybe your heart just wasn't in it as it should have been.
Yeah. I had a good job at that point in the computer business. And of course going and I can remember a really good match we had in it was Peoria.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was like on a Tuesday night or something. And I drove, you know, 4 hours after working all day, drove 4 hours there, wrestled, drove 4 hours back. I mean, I just couldn't keep that up.
Sure.
And I wasn't, you know, Bruiser didn't pay very well at all.
Yep.
So it wasn't worth it. But I will say this. I enjoyed working with Jimmy Valiant. And I would love, in retrospect, to have had a run with him because he was great to work with.
Yeah. 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 And ultimately, you've said, right, you had a falling out with Dick the Bruiser.
Oh, yeah.
So how did that culminate from you saying, I'm done? I mean, how did that falling out occur?
It started, and I'm a little foggy on the timeline. I did get a promoter's license.
Okay.
And I'm sure I don't know, it must have been after I had that match with, you know, as Valiant's partner, because I don't think Bruiser would have put me with him if I had the license at the time.
Yeah.
So it must have been after that. But I did get the promoter's license. So that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
And then, but he still used me and wasn't using me as a top card, but not as a jobber. And then I don't know exactly what happened, but I just quit. Yeah, I just quit at some point. And then he was mad about that, and then he said, well, come back. But then he was just destroying me in the ring.
Yeah.
So I was not happy. So I just walked out. I didn't walk out. I did give him notice, and I quit. And then I went opposition with Spike when he started his opposition group and Stormy Granzig and those guys at some point. And I can't tell you exactly how much time expired between those two events.
Yeah, or like you said, Spike started running some shows when he fell out with Dick, and he was running shows with Stormy, with Bruiser Brody involved, some different guys, and you worked some of those. But like you said, you did get a promoter's license. So did you actually ever run shows yourself?
I never did. I mean, by the time I got that license, I didn't care anymore, to be honest.
Okay.
And actually, Kels McClure, who was the head of the commission, wanted me to have that license. And in fact, it was his plan that he and I would go into business together as promoters. And then Kels died quite suddenly at a match, at a boxing match, I think.
Yeah.
But he had a heart attack and died. So that was the end of him. Then I didn't care about it anymore. I let a guy use my license one time in Southern Indiana. And that, you know, turned into a lawsuit and all sorts of problems. So I said, that's it. I'm not messing with this. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so, I mean, so is that, right, you're working a little bit for Spike, you fell out with Bruiser, all this, is that just what, all these things, is that just ultimately what made you draw the line and say, okay, I'm washing my hands, I'm just done with wrestling for good?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember what made me quit working the independent shows. I mean, I did, you know, after I quit Bruiser and worked for Spike and whoever else was a part of that, that promotion. I did work a couple shows for the WWF actually, as a result of my friendship with Guy Mitchell.
Yeah, okay.
And so I worked two or three shows for them, one in Louisville, one in Indianapolis after a Pacer game. It was a special promotion. But I just didn't want to do it. Well, and also my son was born.
Okay.
And once my son was born, I just wasn't going to be away anymore.
Sure.
That it wasn't worth it. That was a big thing. When my son was born, I wanted to be home at night. What I was getting out of wrestling just wasn't worth the trade off.
Yeah. And you're right. And it's, I mean, wrestlers have always said it's a hard thing to leave, right?
Yeah.
Wrestlers say, right, you never fully leave. Have you ever pop back? I'm not saying as a worker, but have you ever kind of went out to a show, made an appearance, just got out there and wanted to see what was what in wrestling anymore? Or when you were done, were you pretty much done for good?
Well, no, I wasn't. You know, I went out to a couple of, I didn't work though after, I'm trying to think. I think I was 38 years old the last match I worked.
Okay.
And of course I'm 73 now, so it's been a long, long time.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I dream about it. I dream about finishes all the time.
Yeah.
Think still? About them all the time. So yeah, it never leaves you, I guess. And that.
Yeah. It's crazy, right? Cause everybody says that, right? Even it, and that's what, I mean, it's been a downfall of a lot of guys, right? It's that they have trouble to adjusting.
Yeah.
To that post wrestling life, because it's, I mean, I don't know. A lot of people like it. It's an addiction, right? It's just so encompassing of your entire life. It's hard to adjust to that life after.
It is, especially if you've spent some time on top.
Sure,
You know, I had a couple of years like that, and you're getting all that attention. And,
you
know, you'd go to shopping malls, and people would ask you for autographs, and that was nice.
Yeah.
What wasn't nice, though, and people don't think of this, you know, you go into a bar. I couldn't go into a bar if you're a heel, because there's always somebody there wanting to pick a fight
with
you.
Pick a fight, yeah.
And, you know, that always made me real nervous, because I wasn't the biggest guy in the world. So, I was glad to get away from that part of it.
That's right, right? Like so many guys, Bill Watts and so many guys have said, right, if you're going to get in a fight, a real fight, you better win.
And, it helps. It helps if you're 6'4 and 270 pounds like Bill Watt. I find
that's right. That's right.
It's a different ball game.
Yeah. Yeah. And but like you said, right, when you left and started adapting to that life after wrestling, right, you had your son and everything else, but you also completely found a different career path, right, with the church.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't the first one.
I
owned a TV station for 10 years.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. A local station in Hamilton County, which is the wealthiest county in Indiana and really well populated. I leased a station from the local cable company. We went ultimately to about 20,000 homes in the area. And it was for profit, theoretically, anyway.
Sure.
And we did a lot of high school sports and things.
I love that, you know. Theoretically.
Yeah.
Should have been for profit, but.
We always hoped it would be. But I did that, and then and kind of through there is how I got into the church. Actually, we started taping religious services, and one church I was taping every Sunday, and had a tremendous minister with a great message, and he got across to me, I guess you could say, and so eventually, I did go to Christian Theological Seminary at the age of, I think I was 48 when I, that was a 4-year program.
Yeah.
It was very difficult. I mean, I had a degree in education and everything from IU, which wasn't easy, but this was really difficult.
Yeah.
And part of it was because I was older, you know, and stuff.
Sure,
But anyway, I did do that.
So when you owned this station, did you ever run any local wrestling? Did anybody ever buy time for you to run independent wrestling shows or anything?
Well, actually, a Mexican guy did.
Okay.
And he was promoting, you know, Mexican wrestling down here. And came in, and like most promoters, ultimately stiffed me. I don't know why I didn't get the money up front. I'll never know. Because I should have known, if anybody, you know.
Right.
But, we did run a couple of those, the Mexican shows, the Lucha Libre, they call it.
Yeah.
And that was fun. I did enjoy it. Actually,
sure,
I worked on the cameras and everything for that show. This is a lot, but that was about it, really.
Yeah, that's funny. It's it just never completely leaves you. So,
all right.
So since then, have you? I mean, do you ever get invited to events? Ever get invited to signings or anything like that there in the Midwest?
The last thing I did was right before I switched jobs, and my wife here, I got to ask her, where was I getting ready to go when we went up to Chicago to do that?
Church.
Well, yeah, but anyway, it's been 12 years ago at least.
Mm-hmm.
I did an autograph thing in Chicago with Ox.
Okay.
And, you know, and people came and didn't know who I was. Of course, well, I was 50-some years old, and at that time I gained 50 pounds, which I've since lost, but you know, I definitely didn't look like I did in my 20s and 30s.
John, I hate to say it, we've all gained 50 pounds. I mean, that's not just exclusive to you.
Yeah, and, I know.
But it's I don't live in the Midwest anymore, right? I live in Florida, but I've always had that hope that maybe someone would do kind of some form of a WWA little reunion type thing. I know there was not a lot of talent left, but before. Yeah. What with who is that still there would do something, but it never happens.
Yeah,
but
that would be fun. I mean, I would do it, but like you say, so many of them are gone.
Yeah, it is, right. Yeah. And who do you center it around, right? I mean, Bruiser's gone, Bubba was gone. I mean, the Moose is gone. Those next level guys are gone. So it's like, I don't know, who do you put on as that. That money getter kind of guy to draw everybody, you know, it's a weird scenario.
I agree with you. I don't know who it would be. And you know, they did something. Are you familiar with Dan Garza?
Diamond Dan. Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, he started this Indiana Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Yep. Correct.
Which basically he just kind of sends out, puts you in it. I don't know. There's no process.
Sure.
I don't think.
Right.
But
yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
You know, it's fun. Just, I mean, you can legitimately say you're in the Indiana Wrestling Hall of Fame. I mean,
so
that's what I always thought. He could do something maybe from that angle, you know, bring everybody together and have a little banquet or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it'd be a fun thing, right? Just to honor those that are still with us, right? They give them a little recognition. And I don't know. I think there's enough diehards to at least break even on it and to have fun. It's obviously not going to make a lot of money. I don't think that should be the purpose. But
No. But I think you're going to have anybody that you put in the Hall of Fame is going to come and bring their spouse or whatever, and there'll be some other. So yeah, I think you could make money on it.
Sure.
And it would be a lot of fun. Yeah, it'd be a great idea.
It would. I mean, there's still a few guys left, especially as you get into the 80s, right? But even some of those guys. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with him, right? But we recently lost the great Wojo. Who wrestled for Bruiser in the 80s and some, even those guys, it's getting there. It's, and it's my whole problem is I hate when we wait too late to recognize people and they're gone and we don't tell them how much we appreciate them while they're still here.
Yeah.
And,
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, so that's why. And if I still live in the Midwest, I'd probably be the guy to spearhead that and do it, but I'm not there anymore. So, so it makes
Where are you living in Florida? Where are you at in Florida?
I'm in Pensacola. And,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a son who lives here. My job is a remote job. I work from home now. It's been that way. And I always wanted to retire to Florida. And then with the remote job, me and my wife just, we got to a point where why wait? Let's just do it. Our son's there. And so we went at, we've only lived here a couple months now.
Yeah.
But we love it. So, I mean, there's certain things I miss about the Midwest, right? And that connection. I mean, I spent the majority of my life in the Midwest in Indiana. There's always things I miss, but and that's, I've always had that connection. It's always where my heart lies, and it's difficult, right? Cause that's where my wrestling love, my taste, what I grew up on. So there are things like that, right? If anything were to pop up, it had to be a big trip for me to get back for it.
That's not a that's a good drive.
Yeah, not saying I wouldn't do it. I still have family in Indiana, so
yeah,
and everything else, but not saying I wouldn't do it. But where it might have been me spearhead that event, it's now a if it were ever to happen, I would just attend. But that's okay. It is what it is. So you said you worked some indie shows. What finally made you decide to draw that line and just leave wrestling for good?
Again, it was my son, and then every
Oh,
time
that's
I went
right.
out, I was getting hurt.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
wasn't holding up too well anymore, I guess, and I wasn't enjoying it. So I don't remember. There wasn't a specific date that I said I'm done forever, but at some point, well, after I started the TV station, I didn't have time, so I
Yeah,
knew
yeah.
I wasn't going to go back then. So I was somewhere around the age of 40, and I knew it was over.
Yeah, and yeah, you had that peculiar career, right? It wasn't super long, but it was really kind of white hot for a while, right? It was in those territory days. And when you were in Indianapolis, and again, I can't stress this enough, people don't give recognition that those years in the 70s in Indianapolis were big years. And people, a lot of people judge WWA based on those, what they see, a lot of the late tape, and Bruiser when he's really old, and that's not fair. In the 70s, the WWA was right up there, major promotion with everybody else,
Yeah, they were.
and then during many of those years, Johnny Starr was a big part of that,
Well,
and John, and they, again. I don't know. Maybe in as far as wrestling goes, people will always remember you. Maybe they always will as the guy who was supposed to feel Bobby Heenan. I don't think it's a fair statement per se, but whatever, that gave you that opportunity.
I,
And again, were you gonna be Bobby? Who's gonna be Bobby Heenan? Bobby Heenan's a,
right.
like we said, a generational guy. No one's gonna be another Bobby Heenan. But John, I think you did. I think you did admirably. I think you filled it. The role well, you did good, you were good on the mic, you were good in the ring, you had a good look, for being in that role, I think you performed, I think you did what you were supposed to do.
I really appreciate that. I listened. I'm pretty sure it was your podcast. You guys were listing the 10 best managers and
Yeah,
a
yeah.
year or two ago. And
Yeah.
when you had me at number two, I was so thrilled to hear
Yeah, that's right.
that because there was a lot of guys on that list. I'll tell you the guy that I really liked, over other than Bobby, was Duke George. I
Yeah.
thought if he'd stayed around longer, he really had something going for him, I thought.
Me too. Again, and that's there's so many of those guys in WWA with Nick the Bruiser that just I don't think get the recognition they deserve because they were just these Midwest guys. Duke was a great guy, and had that connection with the Valiants, worked with the Valiants and other guys, but that's visually what I always see is Duke and the Valiants, and what a great guy. But yeah, it's fun because it's a hard thing, right? Because there's a lot of good managers that come through there. But that was me and John Lawson. I don't know if you know John, but
Oh, I remember his dad.
yeah, his
And I
dad.
remember John as a kid.
Yeah, they're in Terre Haute and everything else. So yeah, that was me and John doing the top five WWE managers. Yeah, it's been a couple of years, but yeah, like I said, I think you did a great job. I've always been a fan of yours, John. And like I said, I know you've been on, but it's been many years, been several years. Well, I thought it was time to bring you back on, reintroduce you again, talk to you again, and dig into some of these stories a little more. I think I've got an expanded new audience that it was time to do a follow-up.
Well, I really appreciate it. I mean,
Yeah.
as you said, we never quite leave the business, and
No,
it's nice to be remembered, especially at 73 years old.
sure. Yeah,
So,
even that's what I'm saying. Even if the new stuff's not your thing, it's still that's why, my show's called Wrestling Nostalgia because there's that nostalgia about it, right? That everybody remembers what they loved as a kid. And again, I know you're not really, per se involved in the wrestling business anymore and everything else, but is there a way for fans to follow you, keep in touch with you if they wanted to, or do you prefer to
Well,
kind of keep to yourself?
I would love to hear from fans, and I
All
guess
right.
I'll just give you my email address. It's probably the easiest way.
If that's what you want to put out there in the world, you go right ahead.
Oh yeah, I don't mind. It's J Davis, JDAVIS 952@hotmail.com.
There you go. So anybody out there has some memories of handsome Johnny Starr, drop him an email and share your stories. He'd love to hear from you. And you know what? We, I don't know, but John, maybe we have to talk. I think the world needs a handsome Johnny Starr t-shirt.
well, maybe so.
I don't know. I don't know if that'd be in a hot pink or what that would have to be. We'd have to figure that out because, I don't know. Would we have to put on it? Is it like a logistically, do we have to put the guy that followed Bobby? I don't know. Is that like a thing now for you?
Probably. Yeah.
I mean, everything you read about you, that's what they say. I don't know. Do we have to put that sub note on there? I don't.
Hey, listen, I've got no problem with it. You know, I never thought I was as good as Heenan. I was glad to, you know, just get the opportunity to do what I did. There probably was no bigger admirer of Bobby Heenan than I am.
Sure.
So I got no problems with it.
No, if there's a handsome Johnny Starr shirt, you could carry it on your own. We don't need anybody else. that long blonde 70s hair on there. And that's all. You know what? Maybe we just, hey, forget that. We'll just do it as gorgeous. We'll go back to gorgeous Johnny Starr.
There you go.
And prior to that shift, we'll go back to where you started and
all right.
Gorgeous. That'd be good. But John's been a lot. I'm sorry.
No, I said we'll put some sequins on it too.
You know, I'm telling you, I've got a picture of you in who is it? The Strangler? I think the Strangler, John Hill.
Yeah.
I think you managed Strangler when he had that run.
Yeah.
And for a while. There's and you're with him, and you got the belt and everything else, and you're wearing some sequin pants and a sequin vest.
Yeah.
You're completely sequined up, and it's something, John. It's something.
Yeah.
You still have that get up by chance?
No, I don't.
That's too bad. No. That's too bad. I'd pay to see a 70-year-old John Davis wearing that getup.
Well, it has to be a lot of money to get me to do that.
Well, we'll sell some shirts. We'll raise that. So
there you go.
All right. Well, John, it's been a lot of fun talking to you and catching up. And I hope, you know, again, I'm glad to hear you're doing well. And love to talk to you, tell stories. And and who knows? We'll a little bit down the road. We'll do it again, revisit, and reintroduce you to my audience again. So
that'd be great.
Yeah, thank you for giving me time and talking to me. And it's been a lot of fun talking to handsome Johnny Starr.
Thanks a lot.
Hey ho, everybody! Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to John for coming back on the show and talking with me again. What a great interview. What a great guy. Guys, follow me on social media. I'm pretty much on any platform. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts. Go check out all the other WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find them individually on your favorite podcast platform, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account, and then download the app on all of your smart devices. Now, last episode, I said that my guest this week would be Sick Boy, but if you follow me on social media, which you should, you will see that I did switch guests because of scheduling. So coming next episode is former member of Raven's Flock, Sick Boy. We'll discuss everything about Raven, the Flock, WCW, and much more, so come back next episode. Guys, once again, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And as always, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.